Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Back and better than ever, Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. Oh, what a morning. We got a lot going on this Thursday. The Windman somehow still, while working on fumes, is up with us. He's going to join us here off the top. The basketball is crazy. Let's go.
Here we go.
Only one place to start.
The Knicks take a 2-0 lead, pulling out a 130-121 victory over the Indiana Pacers.
We know we're going to have to be a lot better when we go to Indianapolis. And so tomorrow we lock in and get ready for game three.
It's been an unbelievable run that the New York Knicks are on right now. They're doing things that, frankly, you just shouldn't be able to do. They're overcoming injuries you shouldn't be able to overcome, and they are winning at a rate in clutch time games that are supposed to be 50-50 propositions that is practically unheard of. As Wendy sticks around, as we promised, after Get Up this morning, and the hashtag crew is here and everybody else. The most amazing stat to me, Windman, the Knicks have played 8 games in this postseason. 7 of them have gone to clutch time. Only one of them did not reach clutch time minutes, which means late and close. The Knicks are 6-1 in those 7 games, and the one game they lost was the Tyrese Maxey game, the one where he just went nuts and had the 4-point play and everything else. So how are they doing it? You're covering this series. You're there for every second. How are they managing to do it?
I want to say smoke and mirrors, but that's not fair because Brunson has been so good. And their effort level, so in the fourth quarter last night's game, the rebounding was 26-13. 26 for the Knicks, 13 for the Pacers. That is just effort. There were so many times in the fourth quarter where I thought the Pacers were going to get the ball, and the ball landed like near their hands, and somehow the Knicks got it. And so that's not smoke and mirrors. That's just effort. The other thing is the guys that they have out there are playing so hard. Like these Josh Hart minutes, he has not sat in 10 quarters. He plays so hard. His effort level and the speed at which he's playing with is crazy. I have to acknowledge that that is making the difference. Hartenstein, Josh Hart, Brunson, these guys are all going the extra mile. They are doing exactly what a coach wants you to do, which is to make the difference in those 50-50 moments. So what we're talking about is them winning 50-50 games over and over. They are a product of that style of play.
Hembo, I mean, as a person who lives your life dissecting numbers, what should team, like what would be considered excellent in clutch time? Like when we look at clutch time teams, forgetting the individual numbers, and we know that Brunson is having a run for the ages in that, like what percentage, a really good team wins what percentage of their clutch time games?
60-65%.
That's what I thought. See, it's like that. If you're exceptional, you win 2 out of every 3. They've won 6 out of 7, and it required like the kind of performance we'll talk about for decades to beat them in one of those games.
Jalen Brunson has scored 43 points in 32 clutch minutes in the postseason. I mean, if you're averaging a point a minute in like a game, like, you know, not no leverage involved, you've had yourself one heck of a game. He's averaging way more than a point per minute in the most important moments of games against, theoretically, the best teams in the NBA.
Greeny and the crew coming to you live, as always, from the Seaport, brought to you by Chase. My next question for you is about the star level of Brunson. We both made note of the fact that he finished in the top 5 in MVP voting. Hembo, I think we voted him 4th, didn't we?
We did.
I think we put him 4th ahead of Giannis. I think our ballot, had Hembo help me with my ballot, and we did it here on the air, so the listeners were part of it as well. And we had the top 3 the same way that it finished. It finished Jokic, SGA, and then Luka. Then I think we voted Brunson 4 and Giannis 5. It went the flip 4-5. That's the way that it finished yesterday. So that tells you something about how much people respect and regard his game, especially the way he carried this team after Julius Randle went down. but having a Willis Reed moment last night on the anniversary of the Reed game of all things, having a series, a postseason run that is well beyond just being good, right? We're talking about Michael Jordan territory stuff here. Like, is he now becoming one of the true faces of the league, which I would argue at the end of the regular season, I would not have said he was that. Anthony Edwards, people like that, we thought were the next ones. He's 27 years old. Is he that now?
Yeah, this season he's transitioned from an underrated player to a superstar.
Yeah.
I don't know there's any doubt about that. And, you know, I'm hearing from my friends who are Knicks fans, and they're just talking about this last 3 weeks. You know, that game two against Philly with that crazy comeback where mm-hmm. DiVincenzo hits the shot. The obviously game that they lost with Maxey. The game in Philly where Brunson has, I don't know how many do you have that night, 47?
Yeah.
Where it basically got the leverage in that series back.
Yeah, game four.
21 or 23, whatever it was in the fourth quarter of game one in this series. Then last night, Willis Reed light, or whatever you want to call it, like, this is just an amazing stretch here where he's not only delivering, but delivering under all this drama. I mean, it's historic. I mean, I'm watching, you know, you go to these Knick games and they call back the former great Knicks and they show these moments that they had. You know, Allen Houston hitting the big shot against Miami, you know, Sprewell when that one run to the finals, Walt Frazier, you know, winning the 73 title. Jalen Brunson is going to get introduced in 30 years at the Garden, and they're going to show stuff from this week.
Yes.
That's what's happening right now. And I mean, so in one hand, we're looking like, how are they going to get a game in Indiana? On the other hand, what we're doing, what we're seeing is truly historic in franchise history.
That's right. Now I would, and the point I keep wanting to make is a lot of fans, having worked in Chicago as long as I did and done national broadcasting for as long as I have, I know that fans around the country sometimes get fatigued of the New York stuff. Greatest in Knick history. What he's doing right now is not just all-time great Knick history. He's doing stuff that is all-time great basketball history. He's putting up numbers that are Michael Jordan, Oscar Robertson, like that kind of stuff. The greatest. He's playing as well as anyone has ever played in a postseason stretch. Period. New paragraph. I think they're in real trouble. If OG Anunoby is as hurt as I think he is, I don't know what Brunson's foot is going to feel like when it gets up this morning. He seems to be somehow indestructible. Let's live in a world. The next game is tomorrow night. Then they play Sunday afternoon. Then they play Tuesday night. So there is no rest for the weary in this series at all. The Knicks are already running on fumes. If they lose Anunoby, which it feels to me pretty likely that they are about to, how do they win? How do they continue beating this team that is right there with them?
Well, they're getting a little bit of a break here, despite all their misfortune that Giannis and Lillard were injured in the last round. Because at full power, I do not want to disrespect the Pacers because the Pacers beat the Bucks all season long. But at full power, if they were playing a team that was more star-laden than the Pacers, they would really be in trouble. Because the Pacers are a flawed team, they are an ascendant team. They do a lot of things well. They score really well. They've had a great step forward season. But they are not playing it. If you look out in the Western Conference, for example, any of those teams that they're out there, if they were opposite one of those teams here, they would be in real trouble. Because the Pacers struggle, especially defensively, the door is still there for the Knicks because they basically need, you know, they need to not lose 4 out of 5. That's what they need to do. The Indiana is in a position as a poor defensive team where it has to win 4 out of 5. That's a big ask. I don't know how Knicks are going to be standing at the end, but they're benefiting from squeezing out these tight games and the quality of the opponent.
I want you guys both to gander a guess. I'm looking at the line right now for game 3 at ESPN Bet. Just take a guess.
I'm going to guess the Pacers are favored.
I'm staying away from that because I don't know about Brunson, and I don't think.
Well, that's the point. Is those things hover above all of this? But I'm guessing that the people who make these lines saw the same thing we saw, which is OG Anunoby. The term all the basketball players on our show this morning kept using was blowing a tire. I don't know everything, but I know guys don't play with that tomorrow. That's not what's going to happen here. And he does have a history of taking plenty of time to come back from injury. Now, I didn't mean that disparagingly. And
no, that's a true statement.
Those are regular season things generally, and this is a postseason situation. So I'm sure he will come back as soon as he's able, but he doesn't look like a guy who's going to be able. And Brunson's got a foot, and they're going to Indiana, and the Pacers have been right there. I'm going to guess the Pacers are favored.
The Pacers are favored, by 7.5 points.
Yeah.
That's a staggeringly large number. Like, for context, the Knicks last night were...
4.5 points,
yeah,
I think.
Something like that, between 4 and 5, depending on where you were looking.
I wasn't expecting you to say that.
I wasn't expecting to see that.
That's what I mean.
I was expecting 2.5, 3.5.
Me too.
7.5 is a huge number.
That's a blowout. That's a blowout line in the NBA regular season.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you're ESPN Bet or whoever it is that, you know, you're all the different people who make these odds, here's how you're thinking it. You're thinking the Knicks held serve. They need to steal one on the road. The Pacers are desperate. They're going to throw everything and the kitchen sink into this game. The Knicks might be willing to say, let's let these guys rest a little. I'm not going to play Brunson 48 minutes. I'm not going to play Hart 48 minutes.
I think Tibbs is going to do what he does.
Who are they going to play?
Well, they theoretically have other players on their roster. They may have to call guys up from the G League.
If you want to make the point that it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if the Knicks
just sort of give a game away. If we're not leading in the third quarter, we just call off the dogs and let our guys get a little bit of rest and get a little healthy.
Here's the thing. The Pacers' strength is depth. They have a very good deep team. And by the way, they're missing Ben Mathurin, who would have gotten votes for one of the 6 men of the year. So they are not whole either, not comparable to the Knicks. But in game one, the Pacers' bench outscores the Knicks' bench 46-3. Last night, 46-12. So you're looking at that going, as the series goes along, how long is the streak going to get for Josh Hart of consecutive quarters without sitting on the bench? It's at 10 right now. So if you're looking at the dashboard, yeah, you're up 2-0, and that might carry them. That, you know, squeezing these two 50-50 games out at the end, the Knicks may win because the Pacers didn't get a split.
Right.
And they can blame the referees and they can blame whatever, but the Pacers needed to win one of these two games. But if you're looking at this and you're looking at the depth comparison, you're looking at the minutes and you're looking at, you know, the trends, obviously, you're a little bit worried if you're the Knicks.
So Josh Hart is the first player to play every minute in 4 of his first 8 games in a single postseason since Moses Malone in 1981. He's played all 96 minutes in this series, becoming the first player to play every minute through the first 2 games of a single series since Wilt Chamberlain in 1973.
Yeah, Chamberlain never came out of games. Literally never came out of games. There was one season he averaged more than 48 minutes per game because of overtime. But let me ask you a quick question. How many minutes has OG Anunoby been playing in all these games? Because at some point the conversation goes to that. And I heard you were on with Unsportsmanlike this morning. Did they bring it up with you? I heard them talking about it.
So I actually asked our people to look it up. So in the 4 games leading up to last night,
yeah,
Anunoby had averaged 46 minutes. I said, hey, has he ever played 46 minutes in a 4-game stretch? And the answer was no.
No.
And so, look, I am not going to – I'm going to really try not to get out over my skis and try to say I'm some sort of sports scientist.
Right.
But we have seen in athletic history guys who play a lot of minutes get an overuse injury. We've seen that many times. The classic case I can give – although he's much younger, was Kobe when he tore his Achilles. He didn't tear his Achilles that night. He tore his Achilles because he was playing 45, 46, 48 minutes for weeks leading up to that. When you see that where a guy just is going full power and his muscle fails him, it makes you look at those last 4 games if you're building up to
that. Sure, it's hard to believe it's not a fatigue-created injury, and I don't say that critically. Their coach has nowhere else to go. If you're Tom Thibodeau, I know that Tibbs has a reputation. He plays guys all the time. Look, I'm old enough. I'll tell you the stories as we go on today. I remember covering the Bulls-Knicks series, the legendary series of the 90s. On the off days, as you're doing now, Wendy, I would go to the practices. The Bulls would, like, watch some tape. They would, like, have a walkthrough. Riley was working these guys into the ground. They were having 90-minute practices on the off days, like, practicing hard. And people would sometimes say, well, did Patrick Ewing wear down? All that kind of stuff. We'll never know. Riley was an all-time great coach. I think Tibbs is a great coach. But there's no question. He plays his guys. And is that a reason why they are breaking down this way?
It's also maybe a reason why they're winning these close games.
Of course it is. So. But at some point that runs out. Like if they don't get Anunoby back, I'm comfortable saying if they don't get Anunoby back, if you told me right now I had to bet on the outcome of the series, I think Indiana's going to win.
You think Indiana will win 4 of the next 5 games if OG plays none of them? I don't.
If it was...
Who plays for him? Precious Achiuwa?
I really enjoyed
it. And then who plays?
I really enjoyed the 44 seconds from Alec Burks yesterday.
Well, yeah, that's my point. He won't play Burks. He'll have no choice now. But that's been a big storyline in New York for everyone around the country, that he won't play Burks right. at all. Who's going to play? He has no one left to play.
If the Pacers were a little bit more accomplished team, I would lean that way. But because they're a poor defensive team, the Knicks, with this lead, might be able to hold it. But I will say that if you're a Pacer fan, you are, you know, Pascal Siakam this offseason is probably going to ask for and get something in the neighborhood of a $200 million contract. When they traded for him for the Raptors, they were basically admitting we were going to willing to pay him. And he was really good in the beginning of the Bucks series. With OG Anunoby out, Pascal Siakam's got to play like a max player. Tyrese Halliburton has a $200 million contract. He's got to play like a max player. If those two things happen, I think the Pacers can make this very interesting.
We'll have Game 3 tomorrow night. Knicks-Pacers presented by Indeed. Coverage 6:30 Eastern on most of these ESPN radio stations. Wendy, you are the best. Please find a time to get a nap. Rick Carlisle has a problem with something. I think others are going to have a problem with him. You'll hear why next on ESPN Radio. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Brainstorm. What is something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning? Noise-canceling headphones? Meeting-free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to all other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/greeny, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/greeny now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/greeny.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/greeny, GREENY.
Greeny, the podcast.
With you on ESPN Radio, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. Rick Carlisle has an issue. We're going to find out if he's about to have a much bigger one. I'll get into it in 30 seconds after this word from Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
I'm sorry, what? What?
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, what?
I'm sorry, what?
All right, so Rick Carlisle is going to be our I'm sorry what today, as we've got hashtag Hembo. You've heard from him already. Hashtag Bubba, hashtag Cam with us this morning, as usual, from back in Bristol. And I know I mention this a lot, but the reason that I can, that I feel like I have some perspective on these, the long classic playoff series, is that I began my career by covering them. That's what I did at a time when I covered sports before I got this job sitting on my behind and just opining about everything that I see. I did spend a few years out there being a part of this stuff. And so if there's one thing I learned from Phil Jackson and Pat Riley, it is that after every game in a playoff series that figures to go long, the coach whose team lost is going to make a point in the post-game press conference about the officiating. It is not usually done because they believe the officiating is the reason their team lost, as much as it is done because they are trying to set the table for the calls in the next game. I think that's part of the job of the coach. And Phil did that brilliantly. Pat Riley did it brilliantly. Coaches have been doing it since the beginning of time. It is a tale as old as time. And David Stern didn't like it, but he lived with it because it very seldom went where Rick Carlisle took it yesterday. So Rick Carlisle is coaching the Indiana Pacers, and Rick has been around forever. Is he still? He at one point was the president of the Coaches Association. He may still be that. I apologize. I don't know that part of it, but he's been a coach as long as practically anybody. I mean, it's probably Pop and then
35, him. Yeah, 35 years, yeah. If you include his time as an assistant, too.
Right. So he's been around forever. I remember him as a player. So he's been around forever. So he knows what he's doing when he says what he said after that game.
There were 29 plays in game one that we thought were clearly called the wrong way. I decided not to submit them because I just felt like, you know, we get a more balanced whistle tonight. It didn't feel that way. I can promise you that we're going to submit these tonight. New York can get ready. They'll see them too. I'm always talking to our guys about not making it about the officials, but we deserve a fair shot, you know, and there's not a consistent balance, and that's disappointing. Their physicality is rewarded, and ours is penalized time after time. Small market teams deserve an equal shot. They deserve a fair shot, no matter where they're playing.
So that's where he takes it to a place that it doesn't usually go. There's a big difference, even from saying the superstars get calls. Superstars get calls is something that I think you can say. And that means what it means, because superstars can be anywhere. LeBron James became the biggest star in basketball playing in Cleveland. That's not a quote-unquote big market, not by the way we define those things in the NBA. Kevin Durant became one of the biggest stars in the league playing in Oklahoma City. That, I think, might be the smallest market in the NBA. Ja Morant, all these guys, they're in small markets, and they get calls because superstars get calls, and I think that's fair game. I think coaches saying afterwards, I'm sick of the superstars getting all the calls, that I can see the strategy of that, because what you're saying is you want a particular eye now on Michael Jordan pushing off or on anything else that you want the officials to at least consider calling. But when you say what he said last night, what you're essentially saying is the league wants the Knicks to win, that there is an actual conspiracy, an active conspiracy here for the big market team to win. And it's not so much that I have a problem with it, because who cares if I have a problem with it? But if I'm Adam Silver, I have a real problem with that. And it should be reminded to everyone. I have been having these fights with people. I remember Mike and I started, what was the year of the game that the Lakers beat Sacramento on the road in game seven and the world went crazy? Crazy. The officiating in that game was terribly one-sided.
That was 2000, yes.
Okay. 2002.
The Kings series was 02?
Whatever year it was.
It was 02.
It was very, very early, Mike and Mike. And the reason I'm saying that is that we weren't a big enough show yet that David Stern would come on our show then. He would come on many times. He came on all the time years later, and I loved him. But he didn't come on our show then. But I remember taking call after call after email, because this was before there was such a thing as Twitter, from fans saying, the league's, it's fixed, it's fixed, it's fixed. I mean, I could give you a bunch of different quotes, but they all add up to the same thing. It's fixed, it's fixed, it's fixed, it's fixed. And David Stern recognized he had a problem. And I think Adam recognizes that too. These games are not fixed, folks. They're not. Okay, I mean, Mike and I sat there and yelled and screamed this. They are not. Are there bad calls? Yes. Was there a rogue ref, Tim Donaghy, who yes. Is it possible that that happens again? Sure. Did the player who, what was his name, Michael Porter's brother?
Jonte
Porter. Terrible. Do those things happen? Yes. Is there a league orchestrated conspiracy to make sure the teams they want to win, win? Absolutely not. Just think about what you're actually saying. That in these, there are meetings going on in these, well, I don't know what it is you're imagining, some dark room on what, Park Avenue, Fifth Avenue? These aren't taking place in secret places. And they're actually deciding that on the basis of one season's television ratings over the course of 2 weeks, we're going to risk a league and every business in it that is worth billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's laughable if you really think about it. But it's a problem that people think it. And it is the reason that we have the transparency of the two-minute report, which everybody hates. Everybody hates the two-minute report. We can't agree on anything in this world anymore, except that everyone hates the two-minute report. But this is the reason they do it. And this is the reason they have to. So for Rick Carlisle to say, we got screwed, which he definitely did in game one, I have no issue with. And I don't think that, I mean, they don't like the refs getting called out, but that is what it is. And that's kind of a no harm, no foul, if you will excuse the unintended pun. For him to say the superstars are getting the calls, Jalen Brunson's getting it, all those things are different. For him to say a small market team deserves a fair shot, you're a person who is now adding, you have now given all of the conspiracy theorists like a ledge to hold on to. Like I'm imagining if you're a conspiracy theorist and you're like trying to climb up the mountain of conspiracy, you need to find a place, you need to find footing, right? You need to find a spot. Ooh, I can grab onto this, I can grab onto that. Ooh, I just found something. Rick Carlisle just said the league doesn't want small market teams winning. That's what he said. And I think that's a problem. I think he's going to get fined substantially for it. He doesn't care. He did it purposely. I get it. I get why he's doing it. I don't think he believes it. But I think that's kind of the one place you can't go.
You're 100% right. And he almost discredits himself by saying the very last thing that he said. Because up until that point, everything that Rick Carlisle said was between the, you know, the 20-yard lines. They did get screwed in game one. I think almost anyone, even Knicks fans like yourself, would acknowledge as much down the stretch. They definitely got an unfavorable whistle. But in the end, you just can't go there. Right now, there's a 39-33 foul disparity in the series. The Pacers have been called for six more. It's certainly not a huge difference. You can point to any number of plays in practically any game and say, that's the right call and that's the wrong call. Brian Windhorst told us on Get Up this morning that they're sending 78 plays to the league office overnight to complain about this stuff. We're talking about nearly one per minute. Like, it doesn't, you've taken it too far at that point. I think he needs to spend a lot more time worrying about the fact that his team can't play defense and a little less time worrying about the officiating.
Their defense sucks. Their defense is so bad. They gave up 130 points to a team that wants to score 90. Right? The Knicks have not scored. The Knicks have not scored 130 points in a playoff game in 34 years. Can we look this up? Has Tom Thibodeau ever had a team score 130 points in a playoff game? Ever?
I got a couple more numbers for you. So they allowed 130 points, like you said. It was only a 92-possession game. That's 1.4 points per possession. By that measure, it's the worst defensive performance by any team in any game this postseason. The Knicks, after halftime in two games, have scored 139 points, shooting 60% from the field, 54% from three.
60% from the field. Let that sink in a minute.
48 minutes of basketball, 60% from the field. Let me go look up that Tibbs note for you now.
I mean, if you think about that, if you shoot 68% from the field, over the entirety of a 48-point game, you're a 48-minute game, you're going to score, I don't know, 130 points, which is what they gave up last night. And that's the reason they lost last night. Now, I don't have a problem with Rick complaining about the officiating because they got screwed like nobody's business in game one. And he had two legitimate gripes last night that have nothing to do with market size. One, they missed a blatant two-hand push to the back on Halliburton, who has a bad back, from Josh Hart on a play in transition. He was enraged about that, and he should have been. The second is he did not like that they overturned. I keep using the word overturned, and it sounds like it was challenged, which it was not. They changed their minds. I don't know what the official term for this is. On the Hartenstein double dribble, which wasn't, they got the call right after getting it wrong. They did that without a challenge being used or anything else. That is after they didn't do that. They didn't correct it ex post facto on the kickball the first night with, was it Neesmith? Now, I mean, whoever the hell kicked the ball, but they called it a kickball and it wasn't. So those are the things that he's mad about. And he's 100% right to be mad about them. Like, bad calls happen. That's always a part of a playoff series. And in a close playoff series, sometimes the losing team can feel, and the fans can feel, like the officiating went a long way towards deciding it. That absolutely happens. No one is suggesting otherwise. I've seen it. You've seen it. We've all seen it. It happens in all sports. The umpiring in baseball is a joke. I mean, balls and strikes in baseball is the most ludicrous thing I've ever seen. It's never been worse than it is right now. In football, we've seen incredibly significant playoff games decided by bad calls. The most famous one being New Orleans and the Rams in the NFC Championship game. This stuff happens. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting up here saying officials don't get things wrong and it doesn't have a significant impact on the outcome. Of course that happens. I'm just saying there is not a league-orchestrated campaign to make sure the Knicks get past Indiana so that ESPN's ratings in the Eastern Conference Finals are whatever they would be, 8% higher, you know, the last 2 weeks of May. That's just not what's happening.
Tom Thibodeau has now coached 80 playoff games in his head coaching career. Yesterday was the first time any one of his teams ever scored even 125 points in a regulation game.
Yeah, I mean, of course, because that's not how his teams work. So let me get Bubba and Cam in on this. Bubs, you've been with me for a lot of my time on the radio here at ESPN Radio, not all, but a lot of it. What is your perspective on what Carlisle said? Do you have an issue with it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, anytime you're bringing in the rigged portion of it, I would say I have an issue with it. I'm sure, for the most part, he's just trying to stick up for his players, which I get, but I'm with you. Anytime you're kind of going down the rigged path, I'm not a fan of that because it just opens up too much stuff to all the lunatic fringe, if you will, who will buy into that, and they'll just start breaking down all these videos and stuff. Oh, look, there it is rigged. Look at that call right there. But I go back to what Jay Will said on Get Up earlier today. The Pacers need to play better. Like, it's not a ref problem. Sure, there were missed calls, and I'm sure there were missed calls from both sides. But when you look at the amount of, you know, players that are missing on the Knicks side and the bad defense the Pacers are playing, the Pacers have been in these games, and they just need to play better. And they actually could have won both of these games if they just stepped up and played better.
Cam.
So many of the teams left are small to mid-market teams. So why did they get this far if they're not getting, you know, all the favorable calls? So I think the implication is kind of weird, and I think he was probably just heated in the moment. He kept his cool after game one, but then when he felt that they were wronged again after game two, he felt like he should speak up. But I think he took it maybe a step too far by putting in something into people's heads that shouldn't be there.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. I think when he puts that out there, the only thing I disagree with you on, Cam, is that was not a spontaneous moment of frustration. That was calculated. Mm-hmm. These coaches, a huge part of their job is what they say after the games and how they're planning on it influencing what happens in the next game. So he definitely made a conscious decision to do that. And look, maybe that's trying to galvanize his fans, like the fans in Indiana, to go nuts on Friday night, which they're going to do anyway. Listen, anyone who's ever been to a basketball game in Indiana knows those fans are unbelievable. Let me put it this way. There will not be MVP chance for Jalen Brunson at the free throw line in Indianapolis. It's not going to happen. Just not going to happen. Well, I'm just not.
That kind of thing just doesn't happen in Indiana. Yeah, it does in Philly.
It just happened in Philly.
Yeah.
It will not happen in Indiana. Those fans are nuts. And they're but it actually is a whole separate conversation because I'm just kind of going through it. Cam just made me think of something. The future of the NBA, at least in this moment, is very small market heavy.
Yeah.
right? So if you think about who are the big stars, the big young stars, like LeBron's in a big market. Do we consider Phoenix a big market? Forgetting that.
It's a mid.
Obviously, San Francisco is a big market. And they're big traditional. By the market, I also mean like the traditional powerhouse teams, right? Like you know, I don't even know what number market Boston is, but there is no bigger NBA market than Boston. The NBA is built on Boston and Los Angeles first and foremost.
It's 11th, but
And then it extends from there. Yeah. Well, in the NBA, it's second.
Right, of course.
And, you know, but we all know what the big markets are, right? New York, Chicago, et cetera, et cetera. But if you think about where the great young stars in the NBA are right now. Nikola Jokic is in Denver. Ja Morant, who I think does count and will be remembered again next year, is in Memphis.
That's 28th.
Zion Williamson
27th.
Is in New Orleans. Anthony Edwards is in Minneapolis.
They're more of a mid-market.
Yeah, that's a bigger city, but it is an organization, a franchise with no history whatsoever.
Right.
They have no history. Giannis is in Milwaukee.
25th.
Shea.
Who else? Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's in OKC.
26th.
Market in the NBA. Mm-hmm. What's 30th?
Well, the Raptors don't count because we don't.
Oh,
they don't
you.
Count. They don't
right.
contribute to
so,
our.
So we're counting 29.
Yeah.
So what?
Well, I'm only saying 28 on the list because.
Oh, okay.
Well, because there are two teams in LA.
Oh, and there are two teams in New York too. Technically,
yeah. Technically,
right.
Yeah.
So you've got that. Okay, sorry. So I guess the point I'm making is get used to it.
Wembanyama.
Wemby is now in San Antonio.
Orlando is. I mean, that's
yeah.
Yeah, Bancaro.
It's a point well made. Yeah.
So the point
I mean,
is
most of them really.
The future of the NBA is going to a lot of it feels right now like it's going to be small market heavy. Now, are these guys going to go sign in big markets? We'll find out
if they want to win.
When they get
according to Rick Carlisle,
yeah, if you ask Rick Carlisle, they all will, and yet somehow they never do. Haven't been in a conference final in 24 years. So someone go and explain that to me. Sneaky Hembo, go.
What is the only NBA franchise to produce five different MVP winners? The only NBA franchise to produce five different winners of the league's MVP award.
Let me just make sure the word produce does not mean they were drafted there. It just means they won MVP as a member of that franchise.
Yes.
So in theory, LeBron in Miami would count.
That's correct.
Okay, fair enough.
One for Miami.
All right, we'll come back with the answer in a moment on ESPN Radio. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
Feeling like you need a marketing degree and an extra day in your week to successfully market your small business? Let Constant Contact do the heavy lifting for you. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has powerful tools that make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more to boost your business. Now, in just a few clicks, you can launch a marketing campaign that's tailored to your business and goals. That includes email, social, SMS, and more. So you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track your business growth. Plus, you can always count on Constant Contact's award-winning customer support for guidance along the way. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny with you, presented by Progressive Insurance. Protect your home and auto. Save when you bundle. Get a quote at progressive.com. It's another one of these really dangerous ones because I'm so positive I'm right and that I've told everyone we don't even have to bother with this. And Bubba, what did you point out?
Well, your success rate, you say that a lot. Say that quite a bit. And I think your success rate for saying, I guarantee I know this one, is at best 30%. That's maybe generous.
Not as good as a shooting percentage against an Indiana Pacers defense is what you're saying?
Exactly.
So anyway, go ahead, ask the question.
The question is this. What is the only NBA franchise to have or to produce five different MVP winners?
To be clear, Jokic would count once for Denver, not three times.
That's right.
For those who are wondering about it. So Hembo told me I have to go last because I'm so positive I'm right.
Yeah, you seem to be sure.
I'm positive. Bubba?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not positive. I'm writing down different things here in my card. Obviously, the first one that comes to mind is the Lakers, Celtics, going through them. But I think it's neither of those, and I'm going 76ers.
Okay, there's one vote for 76ers. How about you, Cam?
76ers.
And 76ers.
Trivia Nick is also
Trivia
here.
Trivia Nick is
and
here.
And I just like to point out something about Nick. Yeah. Nick was in the hallway listening, and he walked in and said, I know the answer. And he also said, if I had not known the answer, I would not have come in to guess.
Right.
This one was such a layup, though.
But he's so smart. So you and I both think it's a layup. What do Brandon and Jack think?
Brandon and Jack are both saying the 76ers.
So everyone is saying 76ers.
So is Nick.
Go
yes.
ahead, Nick.
Yeah, that's my guess, 76ers.
All right, hold on a minute. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Jerry West.
Nope, you can't change it.
I'm not changing anything.
He's just
I'm saying the Lakers. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're saying there are five. The answer is five people, right?
The answer is five people.
Kobe Bryant, Magic Johnson, Shaquille O'Neal, Jerry West, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's five people who won MVP playing for the Lakers. There's no way in the world they're not right. Go ahead. What's the answer?
The answer is the 76ers.
Jerry West was never the MVP of the NBA.
Jerry West was never the MVP of the NBA.
Oh, my God.
Was George Mikan the MVP of the NBA?
George Mikan was never the MVP of the NBA.
Did they have MVP when Mikan played?
They started in 58, and Mikan was... No. George Mikan would never have been able to win MVP because of that.
Well, he would have then, so I lose that one on a technicality. So the Sixers are going to be Wilt, Julius. Did Julius win an MVP?
He won one with them.
Moses.
Iverson
and Embiid.
And Embiid.
So I thought this might happen. And I was right.
You thought
success
for sure
rate
I would
dropping.
Just say Lakers.
I thought someone would say Lakers. I thought someone would say Celtics. I thought
Celtics are Bird, Russell, Havlicek?
Kuzi and Cowens.
Dave Cowens.
Kusi.
So the one who didn't win it is Havlicek.
Yeah.
Boy, that really steams me. I'm really upset about that now.
All the younger guys nail it.
As a result of this, I'm thinking that we have to ban trivia, Nick. Like, I think a banning, this rises to the level of a banning.
Hold on. Was there a comma after trivia?
Meaning?
Trivia Nick?
No.
Or trivia Nick?
No. We're not banning trivia Nick. We're banning trivia Nick.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
I'm cool with that.
Because I was worried.
I'm upset with what Cam said. Nick's only going to come in here if he knows the answer? That's
Well, that's
ridiculous.
Smart. Though that is kind of smart because he can play
that. Of course
that.
It's smart, but it's ridiculous.
Well,
we are forced to guess.
That's correct.
Trivia Nick, by the way, is 14-2.
So does it diminish
yes.
Trivia Nick's record that he is able to... So on the days he's assigned to the show, then he has to play along.
Of course.
But on the other days, he makes a point of hearing what the question is, and then chooses whether he comes in or not.
Yeah, that's very selective.
Cam and Bubba gave me an open invite to any time I'm in the building that I can come in for trivia.
Yeah, to come in.
And you have to come in.
The point is, you are welcome to come in every time you hear the trivia question, whether you think you know it or not.
You're supposed to be here for the question, not just whether you know it.
Not just to pay off.
Right. If you don't, the point is, if you didn't know the answer, let's say he asked, who are the seven people currently sitting in Greeny's room, and you don't have any idea who they are, would you walk in the door and take a guess?
I'd take a swing at it.
Okay.
No, you wouldn't.
I think it's like being a member of the 2017 Astros. Like, it's very helpful to know what pitch is coming, but you still got to hit it.
No.
That's trivia, Nick.
No, I don't think so.
But he didn't actually know the answer.
No,
he thought he knew the answer.
No. But I think that's wrong. Because the 2017 Astros know what pitch is coming all the time.
They have
and
to swing anyway.
Hit those home runs. What is Nick doing? Nick is like saying, I'm on the Astros. I'm only going to play in games in which I know what pitch is coming.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Oh, I see.
If there's
a changeup. Oh, I'm going up to bat.
If he has no idea when the pitch is, what the pitch is, he's not playing.
Right. I'm going to pretend I'm hurt.
I'm sitting out this at bat.
Exactly.
Right.
Right.
Road games.
Road games, he's not going to do.
He's only playing home games in 2017.
Yeah. Right.
Trivia Nick is a fraud.
Yeah. Trivia Nick, let's put it this way. Of all the things he's not doing, he's not ripping the jersey off of Jose Altuve. Altuve as he circles the bases and comes in to score.
I just didn't like my new tattoo.
To make sure that no one sees the electrical wiring that you have connected to your body.
He's got a buzzer.
Yeah, he's having an EKG done during the game. I'm very upset with this question. So Jerry West was never the MVP.
You lived your whole life.
I want you to read me. What year did West come into the NBA? 59, something like that? 60, something like
61.
That? 61. 61. I want you to read me who was the MVP every single year of his career. He would have retired like in 74, 75.
Played like a dozen seasons.
Let me hear it.
I'll pull up the whole list now. All right, so the NBA's MVP starting in 61. And you just tell me if Jerry West was better. Bill Russell.
Yes.
Oscar Robertson.
Yes.
Wilt Chamberlain.
I mean, obviously, no. I don't even know why I'm saying. I'm just doing it out of frustration. Keep going.
And that's basically the whole 60s. Then there's a Wes Unseld season.
Yeah.
A Willis Reed season. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar started winning. So he was just overlapping with those three guys, with Oscar, Russell, and Wilt.
Talk about bad timing.
The logo, huh?
The man is the logo. He was never the MVP. He was the MVP of a finals that his team lost, by the way. He remains the only person ever. LeBron absolutely should have been the second, but he remains the only person ever. So he won MVP of the finals when his team lost and never won MVP of the regular season?
Mm-hmm. And if you watch Winning Time on HBO like Trivia Nick did, you'd know all these things.
And they still they made cover the logo. That. That's crazy.
He's the logo. And he was never the MVP.
Imagine the discourse that would surround Jerry West if he played today. It would just be totally different. It would be how his teams never rise to the occasion, how he fails to drag his teams across the finish line, yada, yada, yada.
He wouldn't be the logo.
He definitely wouldn't be the logo.
Like, if they were to redo the logo, Michael would be the logo,
it would
right?
build every first take around him and his failures.
That's right. The problem with making Michael the logo is that he is already the logo of Air Jordan.
Right, he's airborne.
A way better thing to be the logo of.
It's more profitable.
For him, for sure, because he became a billionaire being the logo for Nike and would not have. Jerry West has not made $1 billion by his silhouette being the logo of the NBA.
Feels unlikely.
If we were to do it right now, we had to pick one person right now to be the logo, who would it be? Currently playing.
Inactive?
Yeah.
It's got to be Bron.
Jokic? Yeah, I guess, yeah, LeBron's still playing. Yeah.
Wembanyama, you'd question. Have to make it a pretty big logo.
Yeah. Jokic would be like a really unusual looking silhouette.
A cool pass.
It could be easy to tell.
Why does that logo have a dad bod?
Yeah, why is the logo frumpy?
Yeah. Why does the logo not look like any other player in the entire
NBA? Why does he have arm fat? Why are his arms always red, by the way? He should wear sleeves. I think Jokic should wear sleeves.
The man's a three-time MVP, and you're questioning his attire.
You don't even know that Jerry West didn't win an MVP. Who are you talking?
I know Nikola Jokic looks just fine. All right, I'm not going to lie to you. This really put me in a bad mood. We'll be right back.
Greeny, the podcast.
All right, this is Greeny. We're on ESPN Radio. Here's what I'm going to say. So the first Nick teams that I remember, unfortunately for me, come right after 1973. Bradley was still on the Knicks when I was a little kid. Frazier got traded to Cleveland. Reed was limping. I have just the most distant recollections of those teams. So the first Knicks teams that I remember were the Toby Knight, Larry Demick, Glenn Gondrzik teams before Hubie got there. And then the Knicks got really good with Hubie and when they got Bernard, and they had the two they had Cartwright on one team and Marvin, and they would sub in five out and at a time. And I loved those teams. So my point is, I go back that far. The 70 team will always be the most beloved team. I would argue it's the most beloved team in the history of New York sports. I think I wrote that actually in our book. I believe the most universally beloved team in the history of New York sports is not any of the Yankee teams. It's not any of the Giant teams. It is the 1970 New York Knicks. I think this group right now, this team, the way they play, the way they win, this is the most beloved Knick team. However far it goes, this will be the most beloved Knick team since that. And I played golf with a guy yesterday, good friend of mine, who named his son Oakley. That's how insane the Knick fans were about that group. All right, the Ewing teams, obviously, the Riley team, the team that went to the final in 94. Right, so my buddy Matt Redner named his son Oakley. That's how much he loved, and only because his wife vetoed Latrell. So that's how much of a team people love those teams. I think this team is going to be even more beloved because of the way they win.
You said the way they play, the way they win. That's hard for me to wrap my head around, because I think what As sports fans, what matter most, of course, is just the result. But the Knicks have been so bad for so long that I am kind of intrigued by that idea. If it were a traditional team build, if they had traded for Donovan Mitchell and they looked like a normal basketball team with a coach that wasn't so gruff and so hard-nosed and so and took on the city's identity and all those kinds of things, you think they would have been received less favorably than this team?
I think it wouldn't just be as beloved. Not so much as unfavorable, as so much more favorable, because in New York, we are never the underdog.
Right.
New Yorkers are not the underdog. New York teams are practically never the underdog. This group is, to quote the great Lin-Manuel Miranda, they are young, scrappy, and hungry. That's exactly what they are, which is what the opposite of what the Knicks have been for the last 25 years. If they win this series, I think this will be the most beloved Knick team since the championship teams. We're back in 20 seconds.
Thanks for listening to Greeny the Podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.